This week, we look at why broadcasters paid 75% more for PGA Tour broadcast rights and how Disney is using the PGA Tour to grow ESPN Plus and restore the luster to the ESPN brand. Let's get started.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from End Screen Media is with me, and a lot of stuff to digest this week, Colin, between the virus, the stock market, other stuff. It's been a little bit tumultuous.
It certainly has been tumultuous, and I was very sad this week for the loss of two of my favorite conferences. Of course, NAB cancelled. For next month, and I was supposed to be in London for the wonderful Connected TV conference from MediaTel, and well, I'm afraid that's gone by the way as well, although I think they're doing a virtual thing, but with a much reduced footprint. So yeah, I guess we're all feeling the impact of this virus, but let's not dwell on that. I think
Don't be too sad about the latter one, because June 11th is our Connected TV advertising.
That's right.
And we're still 3 months away, and I'm keeping my fingers and toes crossed that we're still going to pull it off. I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic, given all the different containment things that are happening right now, that the worst of the virus is going to be behind us in a month's time. That's the optimistic side of me talking, but I think there's actually decent reason to believe that right now, based on my understanding.
Yeah, I'm very hopeful that the warmer weather, when it gets here, will help us out with the virus as well. So I've heard some stories that say it doesn't survive well in the heat. I think we should talk about a couple of pieces that we wrote this week that are sort of related. And the first one was, I really enjoyed your piece this week on the PGA Tour and how it managed to secure a 75% increase for rights. And you wrote about this, and I think you should tell our listeners about what you said.
Well, I'm happy to, but the caveat I'm going to give our listeners right up front is that I do not have the answers on this one. I'm only asking questions, because for the life of me, I can't figure this out. And my hat is completely off to the PGA Tour for having secured a reported 75% increase in the annual broadcast and cable TV and now streaming fees that they're going to collect, reportedly from $400 million per year currently to increase to $700 million per year under the new deal, a 75% increase. That would be a $6.3 billion deal over the next 9 years. And that $6.3 billion would be added to the $2 billion 12-year international rights deal that the PGA announced with Discovery a little less than 2 years ago, back in June of 2018. So put it all together, that's $8.3 billion in TV money coming to the PGA over the next decade. And the PGA was very clear in its announcement that the biggest beneficiary of this gusher of TV money are going to be the players, the actual PGA Tour players. And all of that says to me that, boy, the 2020s are going to be a very good time to be a halfway decent professional golfer, never mind being an upper echelon golfer like a Rory McIlroy or someone like that, because these guys were already making millions, not tens of millions of dollars per year between their on-course earnings and their off-course earnings. And it's only going to get better from here. So this one's a little bit of a mystery to me, Colin. I really don't get it. I'm a big golfer. I've said in the past, I watch a lot of professional golf. I know people will look at me in a different light having admitted that. I know that 99.99% of people think of watching golf like it's watching paint dry. But when you're very into golf, watching these guys do what they do is really something to behold. So I enjoy it. And I'm very familiar with all the announcers, the players. I've been to lots of tournaments live. But this one is weird because despite my enthusiasm, golf actually attracts a very small, relatively speaking, a very small audience. On an average Sunday when it's not a major tournament, which actually this weekend it is, it's the Players Championship. But on an average weekend, golf broadcast maybe gets about 3 million or so viewers. It's a very upscale audience. So you see a lot of ads for investment firms, insurance companies, Cadillac, Mercedes-Benz, you know, Infiniti, Lexus, blah, blah, blah. But it's a relatively small audience. So the whole narrative around sports as the firewall against cord cutting, it doesn't seem like golf would have that big of an impact. It's one thing to talk about the NFL or another major sport, which there the sports as firewall narrative, I think, is actually pretty decent. In fact, I think NFL ratings were actually up this past season. So that sort of feeds the narrative as well. But for golf, it just doesn't seem as meaningful. I don't really get why it would be important to pay more than networks have been paying. And the only other thing I'd say is that, and again, this is a little bit of inside golf or inside baseball commentary that won't matter that much to people who don't watch golf on TV, but most tournaments have been broadcast on CBS and NBC or the Golf Channel, which is owned by NBC Universal, for a long time. And the announcers' voices are very familiar to viewers. It's like a very known entity, if you will. And it's just very hard to imagine golf being on another network and another network being able to kind of gear up with the announcers and the coverage and everything else. So it's a little weird to me how it could have gone somewhere else. In fact, the US Open is actually broadcast on Fox for the past couple of years. And as a golf viewer, it's sort of a jarring experience because the cameramen are never quite as good. The announcers are not quite as good. The whole thing is like a little bit off. So given that backdrop, it's just a little hard for me to understand how the networks arrived at the conclusion that it was worth paying 75% more. And, you know, I'm not saying it was an arbitrary decision. I would think that there are spreadsheets and everything else. I just would be really intrigued by what assumptions are in there. So anyway, that's I'm guessing most of our listeners could care less about professional golf, but it is part of this larger story around cord cutting and sports as firewall. ESPN Plus came in for streaming. We're going to talk about ESPN Plus in a moment. So it sort of weaves into a lot of things that we talk about week in and week out.
Yeah, it does. And hey, maybe it's time for you to brush up your game and get on the tour, Will.
Oh, God, Colin, don't get me started. If I were 40 years younger, I would be spending 99.9% of my time on the golf course rather than the classroom.
Yeah. So I, you know, I thought you mentioned the ESPN Plus piece. And before we get on to ESPN in general, this was interesting because I think streaming now is becoming a realistic competitor to TV in a lot of sports, and it will be even more so here with ESPN Plus taking a bunch of the live tournaments. It's also taking over the PGA Tour app. So to subscribe to the PGA Tour app, I guess you'll have to be an ESPN Plus member now. And this sounds like actually they've ended up paying more, and that there is actually increased competition for the tournaments. Did I read that right?
No, I don't think you read that quite right, Colin. The ESPN Plus streaming is an augment. It's not going to be like, I could be wrong about this, but I don't think that it's meant to imply that on a Sunday afternoon you could tune in to watch the Masters, let's say, on CBS or on ESPN Plus. It's only going to be on CBS. There may be some augmented coverage, like if you want to watch every Rory McIlroy shot on Sunday afternoon at the Masters, then maybe you need to subscribe to ESPN Plus. But the main broadcast of the afternoon is still going to be on just the one network.
Oh, I see. I see. But well, then
Colin, it's like a super fan play is the way to think about it.
Okay.
It's for the fan that can't get enough, that want every shot, multiple angles, blah blah blah. It's that we've seen that kind of
Of
we've seen.
course, of course. Yeah. And so that's going to be probably a smaller, much smaller percentage of the people that actually would tune in for one of the live
Exactly.
tournaments, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, as you say, it seems odd that they would get such a huge increase when, as you say, the audience is actually declining, not increasing. So that's a bit of a mystery there, right?
It's just a mystery to me. I don't understand it. I really do. When I say hats off to the PGA, I really mean it, because I think for them to have negotiated this deal is absolutely fantastic, and the players should be over the moon at what the PGA has accomplished here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, so you may have been mystified as to why the bidding went as it did for the broadcast rights, but I've got to tell you, Will, what ESPN is doing with ESPN Plus, or Disney is doing with ESPN Plus, has been, I think, nothing short of masterful. So I wrote a piece this week. I went back and I took a close look at, well, actually, what was jarring here was that I remember I was writing about in 2017, I was writing about how bad ESPN was doing, and my goodness, it was doing terrible. There was one quarter I remember they lost 600,000 homes in a single quarter, and actually, if you look at the numbers, Will, they went from they were in 90, ESPN was in 98.5 million homes in 2013. And just 5 years later, in 2017, that had fallen to 87.7. So they had lost, almost 11 million homes. And I don't know if you remember that they were trying to figure out what to do with the channel, hire younger people. They were fired a bunch of people to get costs down. But this, I guess, is under Bob Iger's auspices. What the company did, they did two things that really turned that brand around. The first thing was that ESPN was one of the first cable channels to sign up with the virtual MVPDs. Sling TV launched at $20 for its base 20 plus channels. And the linchpin of its launch, I think, was that it had ESPN. It was the only way to get to stream ESPN online. And if you look at what's happened since then, ESPN has been licensed to all of the major virtual MVPDs. So Hulu Live has it, YouTube has it, AT&T TV now has it, and it's only the very the much smaller ones like Philo that have decided to go without sports that aren't carrying it. Of course, Fubo TV has it as well. And what has that done? Well, that has contributed, I reckon, another 8.9 million users over the last 3 or 4 years. So that has had a huge impact and helped turn around the numbers. But what's also helped is ESPN Plus. And I've got to tell you, when ESPN Plus first launched, I was not very impressed because they had a sort of assortment of second tier sports that you got for your $4.99 a month. Things like athletics, which admittedly did not have very good coverage, and so it was great that they had coverage inside of ESPN Plus, so athletics fans finally could see that type of sport. But I didn't expect it to attract a very, very large audience. But you know, it jumped out pretty quickly to about 1 million subscribers within about 6 months. And what the strategy since then, I think, has been masterful. What ESPN has done is that they have managed to convince people like PGA and UFC to move their subscription properties inside of ESPN Plus, rather. So I'll give you an example. Last year, they struck a deal with UFC. And basically, fight fans now, if they want to watch, if they want to buy a pay-per-view UFC fight, they have to be a subscriber to ESPN Plus. Now, the truth is that they had some bundles in there to get people in, but it didn't change the fact that you had to be an ESPN Plus member to rent that the fight. And this deal with the PGA Tour is another reason why golf fans are going to have to join ESPN Plus. So I think that this
super fans, Colin, just to be clear, super fans.
Super fans, but you know, how many do you think are potential customers? Well, it's got to be, I don't know, I would guess 1 million or something in that range. And so it seems like the strategy here is to go sport by sport and gradually draw people in. And make ESPN exactly what Bob Iger said 2 years ago. He wanted it. He said, over time, our intention would be for that app to be the app that people experience ESPN on. And so where has that left us today? Well, that has actually left the ESPN brand with 81.7 million households through cable, through pay TV, 8.9 million through virtual MVPDs, and 7.5 million, or 7.6 million rather, through ESPN Plus, for a grand total of 98.1. So basically, they've recouped pretty much all of the 10 or 11 million that they had lost. They've recouped them all over the last 2-3 years, which I think is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think it is. It is pretty impressive. I think it's worth spending a little more time on how ESPN Plus got to the 7.6 million, Colin, because I agree with you. I think they've been smart about adding rights, and certainly they're making a nice super fan play, I think, sport by sport. You know, you mentioned wrestling, golf. There will be others coming. I think there's a lot to be said on the pricing side also, and the bundling side, because standalone ESPN Plus is $4.99 a month. But if you buy the bundle with Disney Plus and Hulu, you get it for $12.99. So you're essentially, depending upon how you want to look at it, you're either getting Hulu for free or you're getting ESPN Plus for free if you sign up for that bundle. Or I suppose the other way to look at it is you're getting both, you know, you're getting each for $2.50 a month, because it's an incremental $3.50 a month is an incremental $7 a month. I'm sorry, $6 a month versus the Disney Plus. So $3 each. Sorry for that convoluted. But anyway, the point is that the aggressive bundling, I think, is pulling along a lot of people into ESPN to become, quote, ESPN Plus subscribers that would not have necessarily been standalone ESPN Plus subscribers. But that, I think, is to Disney's credit. I think they recognize that bundling is very important to a lot of people, and they went to market with Disney Plus with an aggressive bundle, and it's benefiting the ESPN Plus numbers. And I think, to your point, it's giving them a nice, you know, a nice optionality, basically, on what to do with ESPN, the core ESPN, down the road. They certainly can't migrate their main sports into ESPN Plus at $5 a month, but they could start to create an on-ramp for doing some of them on ESPN Plus and getting more independence and control over their direct-to-consumer business, and that's a positive in a cord-cutting world.
You bet. And the thing I like about the strategy, Will, is it really gives them a path forward if, as I've seen forecasts suggesting, that there really is going to be very steep decline in pay television viewers over the next, you know, over the next 4 years between, or 5 years between now and 2025. You know, I've seen forecasts saying as much as 75% of people in the US won't have access to a pay television subscription by then. Well, you know, Disney is in a position where I think that they can, as they come up to renegotiate those rights, have different conversations now about bringing that into the ESPN Plus banner, which already has pretty good viewership, and continuing to work with virtual MVPDs, although I think the high growth time for virtual MVPDs is pretty much over. So it's given the brand, I think, a new lease of life in the digital domain, and they're well positioned, I think, going forward, whatever happens in the market.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that if we had been talking about ESPN, which we probably did, by the way, back in the ebb period, we would have probably been thinking it was unlikely that we'd be having a conversation in early 20 that ESPN has as many homes currently as they did back in 2013. I think we would have been skeptical.
Yeah, and the interesting thing there is, Will, that I think the reasons that we were skeptical, we had reasons to be skeptical, right? Because if you look at the numbers, look, ESPN, the linear channel, has continued to decline. I mentioned that in 2017 it was 87.7 million homes. Well, now it's in only 81.7 million homes, right? So I think it still could be the linear ESPN model is not a good model for consumers going forward, that they do want a different approach, and maybe ESPN can deliver it. But my hat's off to Disney for giving themselves different options and giving the brand a new life online. So, you know, I guess we should continue to track how they do with it. It seems to be doing well.
You know, Colin, one last thing that I would say, I thought you made a very good point earlier about them getting Disney getting ESPN into those early deals with the virtual pay TV operators. You have to give them huge credit for pulling that off, because it wasn't a gimme. Sorry to use golf terms here, but it wasn't a gimme that ESPN was going to get into those new bundles, given that the whole point of those new bundles was to keep costs down and keep prices down. And here comes ESPN with the most expensive channel, and they managed to get themselves included in every single one of those new vMVPD tiers. And that's quite an accomplishment, actually.
It sure is. And I was, when Sling announced, I remember being very, very surprised that ESPN was in the bundle. Yeah. Very surprised. Yeah. And I think I wrote soon after how it was actually critically important to the big cable channels that they be in those bundles, because we saw the tremendous growth that we were seeing, and it certainly seems to have paid off for ESPN big time right here. And let's be honest, at $4.99 a month, they're not making that much less than they are making from that they get paid by the cable companies to carry ESPN. I suspect that there are price increases in the future for ESPN Plus too, but notwithstanding, I think it's been a strong strategy to date.
Yeah, I mean, we're out of time, Colin, but I'm going to take issue with that last point that you made about not making that much more. I think they make substantially more on the linear side. They're charging probably upwards of $8 a month now for ESPN. That's whatever, 75% more than they're making on a top line versus, you know, the direct consumer product. So,
right.
You know, but whatever, we don't have to dwell on that. I think we're in agreement that it's been impressive to watch. And, you know, boy, on my pantheon of impressiveness, ESPN or PGA Tour negotiators, I don't know.
Smarter they're, men than we are, Will. Smarter men.
Up there on Mount, what was the Greek mountain?
Olympus.
Olympus. They're all up there on Olympus in my book.
As you said, I think we're pretty much out of time.
We are, Colin. Good chatting as always. Thanks everyone for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast, and we'll see you all again next week.